In this new segment of Advisor Revelations, the DPL team will discuss how to evaluate new solutions and address current challenges and the strategies that can help you grow your firm and AUM.
Welcome to the Advisors Revelation podcast. My name is Logan Cheatham. I am a consultant with DPL Financial Partners, and today we will discuss how advisors, like our guest joining us today, Mr. John Watson, and I would like to introduce John as he is one of our other internal consultants with DPL Financial Partners. How are you doing today, John?
Good. How's it going today, Logan?
Oh, can't complain. It's a Friday. Looking forward to the weekend. Just before we start this discussion today, just want to be able to remind everyone to subscribe to the DPL podcast on your favorite streaming app for any updates. If anything we talk about interests you, feel free to hit anyone up at DPL and use our website, dplfp.com. So, John, before we kind of hop into everything, love to learn a little bit about you, what brought you to DPL, and kind of what's your background experience?
Sure. Thank you, Logan. So I've been in the business now almost 30 years, dealt with annuities almost my entire career. Kind of one of those things, I had my insurance license, got hired into a mutual fund company. Hey, you're the guy with the insurance license, we're sticking you in the annuity department. So as they say, then here you are 30 years later. So what I've done over my career is basically help advisors look for solutions that do involve annuities where they make sense. Obviously, we don't want to put a square peg into a round hole. And when it comes down to it, like what we're going to talk about today, there's nothing that's going to give you a better distribution of your assets than an annuity that's guaranteed for life.
Yeah, that's very true. And some of the talking points I think we should discuss today, John, are just current state of the economy. What's the current state of retirement for most people in America? The traditional 4% rule, which a lot of people do follow, and just being able to help with risk management as well. And with that current state of the economy, what has happened so far this decade? It seems like the roaring 20s are back. It's been a chaotic year for a lot of people. We had the COVID crash, so a lot of people retiring early from their careers. We had a huge market rebound in 2021, highest inflation we've seen since the 80s, another correction in 2022, inflation still remaining elevated. And since October of 23, yeah, the market's been up and to the right, but inflation's still at record highs that we've seen since the 80s. So it's a new world for a lot of people, especially like my generation. We weren't around in the 80s, so this is all new for us. So we've never seen this type of market cycle before. So, I mean, you're a little bit more seasoned than us, John. I mean, how does this compare to the 80s or what you remember experiencing?
Well, in the 80s, obviously, everybody was afraid of inflation. We had the Cold War going on. There's a lot of different things that happened in the 80s. So coming out of the 70s that was on the piggyback of the Vietnam War, you know, the Americana was not as grandioso as what it is right now. However, with that said, let's just look at this, the 21st century. Since Y2K, we've had, obviously, the dot-com bust. We've had 9/11. We had 08 with the financial crisis. And then fast forward, like you were talking about, to COVID, and now we've had a run-up straight in the market. And as of this recording today, we're at the end of July. We've seen the market correct again. And basically, it's just kind of leveling out since technology has kind of jumped ahead of everything else. We see the market leveling out. So the market is a creature of habit. It will always revert to the mean, regardless of which way it goes. But long-term, you have about a 3 out of 4 chance of making money in the S&P 500 long-term if you go back and look at the statistics. Logan, you did make a mention of the roaring 20s are back. Fill me in on that. What do you mean by the roaring 20s are back?
I mean, if we look at the data and just kind of look at the early 1920s as well, it was super hot for the market. But what happened at the end of those 20s was a huge correction, and we had that Great Depression. So just being aware that it's awesome to be able to ride these uptrends and be able to connect and get all of that growth, but just don't be naive in the sense that it's always going to be up and to the right. Just like how you said, every 1 out of 4 years, the market's down. If every 3 out of 4 years, it's up. So just being aware of that, and that's where risk management comes into play. And I think it also goes into just like our next topic with just like the current state of retirement for a lot of people. And some articles that we found that I thought were interesting was, as of Q3 in 2021, about 50% of people 55 and older are out of the labor force due to retirement. And with a lot of those people being out of retirement, from a Forbes article as well, a majority of those people, about 40% of those retirees, are only getting income from Social Security. And especially with inflation being as high as it is now, I mean, we talk with advisors and clients all the time and what's important to them, making sure their essential needs are covered, making sure they can pay for milk and groceries, just making sure that they can have the budget to be able to live, not even spending above and beyond what they need to. And I think what's happening a lot now, which is important, is a lot of people are retiring sooner. And one thing that we hear a lot of advisors talk about is the fragile decade. So what would you consider this fragile decade? And what is that? And how should people think about the fragile decade as they enter retirement, John? I mean, you're in that boat too.
Yes, I can definitely identify with this whole situation. So again, we're in a situation where I think COVID has accelerated retirement for a lot of people. We've had a lot of people my age or a little bit older exit the marketplace. They don't plan on coming back. And I think we're in the yellow generation. You only live once generation. So people are more about the experiences, living their life. So it's the old adage, right? We're not working to live, you know, we're living to work. So people want to enjoy life. Personally, I know that my parents, my mother collected one Social Security check. My dad collected zero. So between both my parents, they both died early, and together they collected two death benefits of $250 each and one Social Security payment from the government. So I mean, this is what you hear, but also what we're hearing as well is that these people are really, you know, with inflation impacting them and with just taking Social Security, it's just not enough. So you're going to have to rely on your investments. And Logan, what was the latest statistics that we looked at, I believe, on pensions? Because I know that pensions are my parents' generation, and especially the generation, my grandparents' generation, the baby boomers, were very heavily invested in pensions. I do have a sister that has a pension through a government agency. Then I have another sister that's a nurse, and she's saving for herself. So it's really funny. The sister with the pension is already retired, really has no money. The sister that is still working has a lot of money, but has not retired yet. So it's interesting how the frame of mind comes about. But
yeah,
what have we learned about pensions, Logan? I know you did the research on this.
Yeah, I mean, just being able to look it up, just pensions are not common anymore. I mean, about 5% of the publicly traded companies have pensions now. So, I mean, as we can see with just over time, I mean, back in the grandparents and great-grandparents days, companies had the ability to be able to sleeve off some money to be able to give them that pension, which was their 401k retirement. And then as society has progressed, then we've kind of seen less pensions, and now we've put these 401k strategies on the end client now. And some people might not know how to save for retirement. I mean, I remember when I was in car sales, a lot of people didn't even open a 401k account. So a lot of people aren't aware of where they can set up retirement funds or investments. And a lot of it's on the consumer. And especially with what you can hear in the world now or on Google, you can hear the right things and wrong things depending on how you ask the question. So there's just an oversaturation of just info, positive and negative. And it's really hard to sift through that. I mean, my mom's in her retirement phase now. She's in her 50s and she's thinking about planning for the future. And just her searching herself, she's like, this is just a lot. Like, this is really confusing. And you don't know which way to look.
Exactly.
And it could be really difficult for people.
Exactly. So let's recap and see what we discovered. So we discovered that people were retiring earlier. Mm-hmm. We are living longer. COVID might have affected that a little bit, but for the most part, we're living longer. Pensions are gone. So now the onus is on us as financial advisors and us as individuals to manage our own pensions. And remember, if you manage your own pension, your own withdrawal strategy, and you get it wrong, there's no going back, only other than going back to Walmart to be a greeter and get a paycheck.
That's very true. And I think that ties in well with just the next topic of when advisors and clients are talking and having conversations of how do you withdraw this money after you've accumulated all this wealth? You got to decumulate it to some efficiency. And the traditional rule of thumb is the 4% withdrawal rule. And you've had experience with this on the Fidelity side as well, of just working with them for a multitude of years. I mean, what are your thoughts about the 4% rule? What have you seen with it, and what are some pros and cons?
Sure. So With any financial planning software that you use, any financial planning projections that you use, typically what most software will do is try to figure out anywhere from a 75 to 90% confidence level. So what that means is that either 3/4 of the market up to 90% of the market, you're going to be successful. But there's always that 10%. So those where, you know, a lot of black swan events like what we discussed earlier, you know, Y2K, 9/11, 08, COVID would come into play. And typically it runs into a sequence of return where we have a lot of things that happen at one time. In fact, Y2K and also 9/11 were two black swan events that happened within a couple of years of each other. And that was very impactful to the market. It took a longer time to recover from that, even though we had a larger one-year dip in 08. So with that said, on the 4% rule, there's a couple things that you've got to keep in mind. So first and foremost, you've got to stick with the plan. There's no deviation. Once you put your money in, you're sticking with that allocation. You're sticking with the withdrawal, adjusting it for inflation only. In the really good years, you're not taking a whole lot of extra money to buy a boat, take a dream vacation. You're sticking with a constant systematic withdrawal. Also on the flip side, if the markets get really, really bad and you've got to really dig in and test your own constitution, you've got to stick with it. So keep in mind that, you know, if you don't stick with it, then there's other ways to go. And in fact, Wade Fowle has came up with a kind of a questionnaire that you can take for yourself. It's called RISA, and it's a retirement income style awareness test to see just how you would best fit into different ways you can withdraw money in retirement.
Yeah. And I've used the RISA a lot with advisors. And I think the way that that is very helpful and impactful, and if anyone's a member of DPL, this tool is complimentary for you folks as well, which is a really added value. But it's super simple. It's just 12 questions for the client to fill out. And it's just figuring out the behavioral financial side of it. It's not numbers driven, but it's just how you mentally want to handle retirement. And the reason that it's impactful for advisors is now you can marriage your financial plan with how they're mentally prepared to take their retirement versus saying, this is the strategy we use here and you got to ride or die with it. And so being able to be more tailored and being able to be more specific to your clients and being able to impact them. And the results are tremendous. And you can find out a multitude of different things, maybe some things the advisor didn't even know about. So it can be a really impactful tool, and it's very quick and easy to do. It doesn't take too much time. Now, also with the 4% withdrawal rule, some things that I found out with the Charles Schwab article that I thought was pretty interesting was when it comes to this 4% withdrawal rule, that is the maximum, quote unquote, that you should be withdrawing every year. But one thing I didn't even think about too is with that 4% withdrawal rule, you're assuming that advisory fees, Uncle Sam, and taxes are taken out of that 4% distribution. So if you're a traditional person, you got $1 million portfolio, 4% withdrawal rule is 40 grand a year. So if you have taxes and advisory fees of 5 grand, that means you got $35,000 to live off of. And especially with inflation where it is, 35 grand is not a lot to live off of. I think it's right above poverty level.
Exactly. Right. So I completely agree. And I think when it comes down to it, knowing your withdrawal strategy style is as important as setting up the withdrawal strategy and what you're investing in. So like I said before in our earlier segment is that you really want to make sure that you're able to manage the risk. And do you want to manage the risk with you and your advisor, or do you want to let somebody else manage the risk for you and guarantee if the money does run out, you still have income? Because the last time I checked, I'd rather have no asset and income than income and no assets. And let's look back to my sister who retired in her early 50s from a government job and has been living on a pension, basically on an annuity since that time. And she just turned 62, so her Social Security kicked in. So keep in mind that, you know, that's why people like pensions is because of the paychecks. And Logan, I know you always talk about David Blanchett. What does he say about income and retirement?
Yeah, one thing David Blanchett said that I thought think resonates with just myself and just everyone in general is when I was at a conference in Connecticut, he said more Americans are comfortable with spending a paycheck in retirement versus drawing down their overall portfolio. And I actually just had a recent conversation with a client direct case, and we were talking about that. And he was like, yeah, like I've lived and worked 40 to 50 years spending this paycheck, being able to live off of it, saving up this money. And he's like, now I'm about to retire in October. He goes, it's super like just overwhelming to be saying now I have to decumulate all of this wealth. And he was like, well, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to be able to put some money in two annuities, turn those on at the beginning of the year because I'm going to retire, and I can spend those paychecks in retirement because I know that money's always going to be there. And so it gives him that peace of mind of saying, hey, I'm still getting that paycheck and I'm able to spend that paycheck. And the other thing too is if that annuity solves for your essential needs and you're able to cover all of those assets, you can invest the difference more aggressively. So you can be able to try to create more generational wealth, to be able to help out your kids and grandkids or charities or however you want. And I think one of the things that you mentioned earlier is with the 4% withdrawal rule is it's a confidence rating of about 75 to 90%. So there still is a pitfall of 10 to 25% that your plan can fail. And if a black swan event happens, that plan can fail real quick. And so how can we help clients and advisors be able to improve this confidence to 100%?
Exactly. And I think that's the key, because regardless of what happens in the market, you really don't want to have to think about it, how it's going to impact your income in retirement. I think that's huge. I had some advisors when I was at Fidelity, and they would always say that a good income investor makes a great market investor just because they don't have to worry about the day-to-day. And they know that they're going to have that paycheck coming in, like you said, like Blanchett said, that they're spending their paycheck and they're not worried about their investments.
Yeah, that's very true. So why should advisors look at insurance carriers to manage risk versus them managing the risk? Like, what are the reasons people should look at annuities for income in their financial plan? Like, I can do a 4% withdrawal rule. I can do a 5% distribution rate. Like, I don't need an annuity carrier. So why should I even look at them, John?
Well, let's talk about the risk management overall. So first and foremost, annuities were designed originally to be a lifetime income source where you cannot outlive the asset. So what I really want everyone to kind of consider is that when we're talking to clients or client, you know, if a client's listening to this, I want you to consider what is more important to you. Is it maintaining that asset or is it the income you're going to get from that asset? So my magic question always has been, what's more important, the asset or the income the asset can produce? I think that is something that you need to look within yourselves, or as advisors, you need to really understand that with your clients to make sure that you have the correct conversation with clients. Next, then, let's think about the different ways to take money out of retirement accounts. So again, and this is where the RESA profile, the questionnaire is going to help you out where clients fall within the grid. Basically, it's a four-square grid, and it's going to show where clients' preferences will come out. So are we going to do a systematic withdrawal? Are we going to do the 4% rule? Remember, these are the clients that are going to stay with the plan 100%. And don't always assume that clients are going to do this. And as clients, don't always assume that you yourself will do this, because as we get older, and trust me, I'm living this right now, as you get older, you get more conservative, and it bothers you more when you get big pullbacks in the market. So the first thing is systematic withdrawals. The second thing is, we talked about pensions, right? So we don't have pensions anymore. However, you can go to any insurance company and create a pension. If you give the insurance company $10, then in return, they give you back a systematic payment on a monthly or annual basis coming back to you. So typically right now for a 60, 65-year-old, if you give them $100,000, you're probably going to get somewhere around $6,500 a year back, about a 6.5% to 7% payout rate. Again, the downside with this is that a lot of people we talk to do not want to do this because you're giving up your asset in return for a pension payment. So it's not as attractive. So Logan, I mean, have you sold very many of those, or have people that really want those type of annuities anymore?
Just like pension-driven annuities?
No.
No, I would say most of my advisors and the clients that I work with, they prefer annuities with a guaranteed withdrawal benefit, just because I think a lot of people have misconnotations when it comes to annuities. And a lot of people, when you think income for annuities, you automatically think annuitization. And I think that's a huge misconception in the marketplace.
Right.
Annuitization overall, and especially on the DPL side of things, we have less than 1% of our cases going to annuitization. Because that is truthfully giving up that $100,000 in assets in return for a promise payment.
Sure.
If you pass away, you might not get all that premium back and the insurance carrier pockets it. That's maybe a reason why advisors don't like looking at annuities, because it's a dead asset off the books that they're not managing. So that's revenue that's going away from the firm. But also, if the client doesn't live to a specific time frame, they're out that money. And so, yeah, I 100% resonate with advisors. That does sound like a terrible return on investment.
So let's recap real quick, okay? So again, the first way is we're going to do the 4% rule. There's a lot of risk involved with that. There's a lot of things you need to happen. You need to be a dedicated investor to where you're going to stay in the market, you're going to stick with the plan, you're not going to deviate. So that, honestly, to me, I think that will be the hardest thing to do. Secondly, you fund your own pension plan with an insurance company. As we discussed, it's not as attractive because you give up access to your money. If you don't live long enough in a lot of cases, then you're not getting all your money back, or at best, you're breaking even. So there's a hybrid between those two. And this is what, Logan, you talked about, which is called a guaranteed withdrawal benefit. And you can use this with almost any type of annuity product out there, whether it be a fixed rate, whether it be a fixed indexed, whether it be a buffer type annuity,
right,
or even a variable annuity. So, and that's kind of why we're here. We're here to help you kind of guide through all these different types of annuities, which works best, and then help you out with what makes more sense for your situation. Currently, right now, with rates being so good, we're back to when I got in the market, in this market and in this business in the late 90s, the rates are that good right now. So in the current state, the rates are very good. What I would say, if there's any advice I can give to anyone, is that you maybe want to start looking at income 5 to 10 years ahead of time, as opposed to when you retire, because the earlier you start, the less money you have to commit to the income stream. So in my own situation, what I've been doing is, as the market has been riding up, I've been shaving money off and buying income for the future. So thank you, NVIDIA. I think we all can probably identify with the way the market has gone. So, and again, you know, that I have heard the comparisons. So this is the Roaring 20 again. And again, with AI, I think what we got to remember is that it's going to drive just more than the technology companies. It's going to drive the entire market, and AI will be a big game changer for all of us going forward in the future. So I'm not here to give investment advice, but what I will say is that we are dealing with companies making money that have solid balance sheets. So I'm always optimistic about the market. I'm a big believer in the market, but I am also a big believer that protect your income for now and in the future so that you don't have to worry about the day-to-day in the markets when you get corrections, and making sure that you don't jump out at the wrong time. Because the old adage goes is that you buy high, sell low, repeat until broke. You do not want to get that cycle.
Yeah, exactly. And just being able to hedge it against the time, like what you were saying, talking about it 5-10 years ahead of the future. Yes, it's less money you need to invest up front. Two, you get all those deferral credits. You get all of that growth too. So like, you can grow your account value very efficiently. And one thing that I've been talking with my advisors to help with this too is like, what's supposed to happen within the next 10 years? Everyone's talking about it. Social Security is supposed to not exist. Granted, let's be honest, it's probably going to stick around, but the distribution rates are going to probably be a hell of a lot less for me versus your generation. So it's going to impact us more. But I think one of the ways to think about annuities, especially with hedging this Social Security uncertainty, is let's talk with these people that are in their 45s and 50s, because by the time they retire, their Social Security uncertainty is going to be at the top of their mind. So if we can be able to solve for their efficient needs now with an annuity, have the Social Security money be gravy on top. Have that be your fun money and your spending money, instead of being like the 40% of Americans that are just living on that for your paycheck. And especially Social Security only adjusts for inflation. So that's only a 3% increase in it. That's not going to get a lot of people a lot.
And general rule of thumb is that probably what you want to cover, that gap you want to cover for income, you want to look at whatever guaranteed sources of income you have coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You want to look at your essential expenses. So this is stuff that you need to keep a roof over your head, food on the table, clothes on your back, things of that nature. and then back that out. And whatever that gap is, then that's what you fill with the annuity. You don't want to overdo it on the annuity.
Yes.
And then the rest of the money you invest. And like you said, the extras or anything that you really can tighten the belt and do without when the markets get bad, then yeah, don't worry about that. But you know, in some cases, a lot of people, they live for the lifestyle. If their lifestyle is that important, then you need to cover it all. So I'm not here to tell people what and what is not essential. But remember, you know, to recap, I mean, if you think about it, like we talked about, the markets are always going to be volatile. We're, as of recording here, we're about 100 days away from the presidential election. And Joe Biden just dropped out of the race. Kamala Harris took over. Obviously, Donald Trump, there was an assassination attempt. So if you think about it, there's going to be a lot of volatility.
Yes.
But historically, the markets have big trends, right? Usually during election years, the markets are up. Typically, the year after an election year, the markets are up. So, and it doesn't matter whether it's a Democrat or Republican, just on average, that's what happens.
Exactly.
So the whole thing is you've got to find a way to stick with it. We will see the volatility. And then also keep in mind that since the onus is now on us to create our retirement income, ask yourself, what is this money for? Is it for income later? Or is it for just growth for, you know, a rainy day, or I want to buy a boat, I want to buy a Corvette when I retire.
Right.
So kind of keep that in the back of your mind. And then lastly, and I can't stress this enough, lastly, take the risk and transfer it to companies that are used to hedging the risk, the insurance companies. This is the way to make sure that you take your 75 to 90% confidence level and turn it to 100%. Because even with the insurance companies, a lot of them are designed to spend those assets down to zero as you're withdrawing them out. Then they are on the hook to pay you as long as you live. And you can live to be 150 years old. If we get some groundbreaking medical technology that makes us live to 150 years old, they have to pay you. So that is on the onus of the insurance company. So put them on the hot seat. Let the insurance companies split the risk and use that to cover that gap. So it's like when you're in New York and you're on the subway, they say, watch the gap. So just like when you go into retirement, watch the gap.
No, I definitely agree with that. And I think the other last thing to leave people with is that's happening with big companies too. IBM just transferred all of their pension plans to Prudential. So it's happening with bigger companies. So why not be a small person and do the same thing? You know, like if big companies, big Fortune 500 companies are doing this, I don't think it's a bad trend to follow to some extent.
Exactly. And if you look at the overall marketplace and you look at the difference in all the annuities out there, typically the annuities that will pay the best for us in retirement are the advisory share annuities, because there's no commission built into the products.
Yes.
You typically get, it's a better deal for the consumer. So for us as consumers, and I'm a consumer and I'm looking at this too, I'm going to go where I'm going to get the most income for the least amount of money. And there's nothing that has touched any of the advisory annuities consistently over the last 2 years that I've seen.
Yeah, exactly. And John, I always enjoy talking with you. You're a great partner. I enjoy working with you on our team. And thanks for joining the episode. And just want to thank everyone for being able to listen today. And again, any questions, comments, or concerns about wanting to learn more about DPL or wanting to talk with us, just reach out and go to dplfp.com and also subscribe to the podcast again on your favorite platform. And we will see you next time.
Thank you very much. And don't forget about the brochure. We have a brochure based on retirement income to help you through these decisions. So please look at that. And also, if you haven't done it yourself, take a retirement income style awareness test on yourself and see how you come out. You might be surprised.
Yeah, for sure. That's always great feedback. Awesome.
Thank you.
See you, John.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. To hear more advisor revelations, go to dplfp.com and subscribe on your favorite podcast streaming app.